This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Hi, Jason Gibbs, Joy Production Manager. It's Radiothon time. We still need Joy and we need your support. If you appreciate our free podcast service, our voice for the LGBTI community globally, and the volunteers that make our service possible, please sign up, renew your Joy membership, or make a tax-deductible donation before June 30 to keep our service possible. You may win a prize. Head to joy.org.au and click on either the Become a Member or Donate tabs to support us. If you appreciate our podcast service, let us know in the comments section when making your donation. Joy Podcasts, where you want them, when you want them, at joy.org.au and on iTunes.
Hey, this is Anthony Kalia. Support Joy 94.9, this radiothon. Sign up online at joy.org.au.
Hello and welcome to Been There, Done That on Joy 94.9. Lovely to have you with us today. And with the sounds of our band playing their little tune, Snow Dancing.
Which is quite a toe-tapper.
It is quite a toe-tapper, but it's also indicative, of course.
It's almost ready for the coming season, isn't it?
You're spot on, Gordon. Well, yes. Hello.
Hello. Let's introduce ourselves.
We just had a bit of a chat before we said hello.
Yeah. You're Gordon?
And yeah, I am, yes.
And you're Phil. Yeah. I was when I woke up this morning.
You felt yourself, did you?
I knew who I was instantly. Doesn't always happen that way.
When you stagger to the bedroom, the bathroom, and you look in the mirror and think, who's that?
Oh my God, I'm him again.
Yeah. We all go through that anyhow, but at least we're still here doing it.
Been There, Done That is a Joy 94.9 history program, gay history, icons and icons and events in history that we still commemorate. Sometimes it's the birth, sometimes it's the death of, sometimes it's the way events roll out. Who would have thought a few weeks ago, fellows, that the opinions of Margaret Court would have had such ramifications?
Well, I guess when you sort of say what she said, you're certainly going to get some reaction to it. And I think the reaction to it has almost made our case a bit stronger.
Well, I think we can say thanks very much, Margaret, for raising the topic in such a public and open fashion.
Yeah, she brought this up a few years ago.
Yes.
And that memory sort of faded. So this is coming back and just reminding everybody that we've got a fight to win.
And I did see a very interesting letter in the paper about, it could have been the editorial where they just mentioned that one man had actually thrown a pie in the face of Alan Joyce for the same reason, live on television. And they sort of said, well, he's put up with this and treated it very, very well.
It's getting personalised. Mm. In such a way that people can see that there is the only way out of that is to actually let the process complete. The public is behind it, all against these personal attacks. And, as you say.
Chris, the only thing I could say is that this is why we should never have a plebiscite.
Oh, truly.
You know, this should be what the government should be doing, what they're elected to do, and pass the bill in the House. And that should be it.
They are our appointed people to
They're elected representatives.
Yeah,
yes, we elect them.
And
do your job.
Yeah, but is it majority rule?
Well, the point is that they say that in the House, I think that the equal marriage lobby people have worked it out that there is enough people to pass the bill through.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Margaret had better watch what she says. She wants to boycott Qantas because of their support for the cause. Hmm. Well, she lives in Perth.
Yes.
That's a long bus ride from to anywhere. Virgin Australia supports equality in marriage. And when you put it that way, she doesn't support equality.
No, this
Does
is
she
true.
Have any women's rights? Were they fought for in the past? Well, did they get equality?
Mm.
That's a bit selfish. I got my equality. I'm happy. Screw you, gay people.
Yeah, yeah.
Not us, as it turns out.
Once again, those people who are quoting the Bible are quoting a social system 2,000 years old.
Oh, probably even older than that.
Slaves were legit.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And okay, what else are we going to reincarnate from that era?
Well, they don't.
Just to satisfy that one little thing in the books that said, ah. No. And of course, you've got to work out what the reason was or how the words actually portrayed same-sex relationships at that time.
And it's been retranslated more than Chinese whispers.
Oh, yes.
So let's not have any mistakes in there. Well, it's a good book to hide behind.
Yeah, that's
when you haven't got a thought of your own. The Bible said so.
Yeah, the Bible told me so.
That's right, that was the song.
Yeah.
And once again, myths and mythology surrounds even public people. We've got the anniversary on the 6th of June, 1835, regarding John Batman, the Australian-born founder of Melbourne, and his signing of a treaty with local Aborigines for land in Port Phillip Bay.
But that was totally illegal, according to the government of the day up in New South Wales.
Well, because he wasn't an appointed...
That's right.
European
to do
but
it.
The funny thing is, of course, that he was negotiating with people who were likewise not empowered to do anything in exchange.
That's
in
right.
that particular
yes.
process.
Yeah, yeah.
They weren't real local Aborigines. They had no concept, of course, of the European idea of transfer of the interest in land. Their interest in the country was always there.
That's right, yes. It almost brings it up to date with what has been going on in the conference that they had at Uluru a couple of weeks ago, where it was all they were trying to get to have their voice heard. And I've read one article which says that they should not change the constitution because there should be nothing about race in the constitution or something like that, you know. And that was from a very right-wing group of people. But it's, to me, I think that we still have to do something to recognise the complete ownership of the place of the Aboriginal community, which they did for 60,000 years.
The Constitution is a fairly imprecise document, and there needs to be a lot of precision in the wording and the concepts so that there's no doubt for future interpretation. So that's why a separate supporting document is where all the guts and gravy and veggies are going to be.
I was under the understanding, though, that they didn't own the land. They belonged to it.
They belonged to it, yes.
So
right.
Our concept of ownership
is totally different.
You can't match it. You can't say, well, you know, we'll give you this for that.
No, because...
It's not theirs to give.
That's right, because they were nomadic people. They would move from place to place where the food was, and then they would come back to the... They'd do a triangulation of the place.
Yeah, but it was a sign of the times, though, wasn't it? You'd go to take territory. Mm. It's not just the British, but everybody was doing it.
Yes, that's right, yeah.
And there was some rule of finders keepers.
Because I mentioned a week or so ago about the anniversary of Blaxland, Wentworth and Lawson going over the Blue Mountains. And it took absolutely, I don't know how many people to try to find a way over the Blue Mountains, but nobody thought to ask the Aboriginals. They could have probably taken them straight over the Blue Mountains in one go,
but
because they didn't bother to ask. You know, they thought they knew too much.
Yeah, we just instinctively know better.
Yeah, yeah. But I don't think we do most of the time. Anyhow, John Batman did found a little township of, but it wasn't called Melbourne then. I don't know what it was called.
Well, it certainly wasn't Batmania.
No, or Batville or what have you.
And it wasn't Gotham City.
No, that's for sure. Because Melbourne wasn't named until when Queen Victoria was on the throne back in the 1800s. Because
after Lord Melbourne.
Yeah, her Prime Minister. Mm. So it was back in the 1830s or something, rather, that happened. Yeah.
Before my time.
Was it?
Yeah, oddly enough.
I thought you were old enough to know it.
I read.
Now, Batman, whilst he did a fair few good things, he was also a person of that era. And when the situations arose, he didn't have any problems considering the local population as being an enemy.
No.
And dealing with them accordingly.
He dealt with them as friends, yes.
Well, he dealt with them with his friends when he needed to, but that's then right. Likewise, if they got stroppy or he got stroppy with them, yeah. Bang, out came the muskets, etc.
That's right. Yep.
And his token gifts to them were not given in the with the best of reasons behind them.
But he was the only, he's the only Australian-born man to ever found another city, because he was born in Sydney of immigrant parents.
Now, Gordon, we think of Melbourne as being a wonderful city, but it's been built by the gold that was discovered up country.
That's exactly right, because it was on the 9th of June in 1851 that Victorian Governor La Trobe offered a reward of £200, which was a hell of a lot of money in those days, for discovery of gold within 200 miles of Melbourne. 2 days later, on the 11th, the first gold was discovered in Victoria, just up between Geelong and Ballarat. So that was the thing. And of course, with the gold came the huge gold rush of the population absolutely swelled in Victoria to make it the thing. And then we got all this gold, and it's from the gold that we have all these wonderful commercial council buildings, you know, the wonderful town halls and
civic
everything.
Buildings.
The civic buildings and the Parliament House up the top here.
And the banks.
And the banks and all the rest of it.
Those sort of places. Mm. And also reflected in Ballarat and in Bendigo, where gold was discovered, and you got Sovereign Hill in Ballarat, these sort of things. It's a real part of Victoria's history, and we are so glad that they did that. Otherwise, we might have ended up being sort of not as well endowed as we are.
And of course, just recently, the Premier Daniel Andrews has apologised to the Chinese population for having to walk from Robe to Ballarat.
South Australia.
They walked from there because they would have had to pay £10, which I have a vague feeling somebody said it was worth about $1,900 now to land in Victoria in those days. So you can imagine what £200 was worth to find gold.
Well, controlled immigration. Funny about that.
Yes, well, it's almost the beginning of the White Australia policy,
yes,
wasn't it?
Yes, it sounds like
taxation without representation
Government's
good at that.
But then, of course, it also made Melbourne marvellous Melbourne, it used to be the
Queen City of the South.
Not only that, of the world, it was the most wealthy city in the world at one stage, with all the gold that was coming through here.
Where's it all gone?
It's still in the there's still some in the ground. They're still finding bits and pieces now and again.
We're going to hear from someone who's given us our gay theme.
Oh.
I wonder what you think it might be.
It's where you, what is it?
It's the one place where you can go and weigh a pie accurately.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, I don't quite understand that, Phil. So
we'll talk about it after.
Well, perhaps I should listen to the piece of music and then I might...
It's all in the music. Well, technically the lyrics.
You're on Joy 94.9. Been there, done that with Gordon, Phil and Chris and a croaky voice. Oh.
Joy 94.9 in Melbourne. joy.org.au for the world.
You dare to dream, really do come true. Someday I'll wish upon a star and wake up where the clouds are far behind me, where troubles melt like lemon drops away above the chimney tops. That's where. Somewhere over the rainbow, bluebirds fly. Birds fly over the rainbow. Why then, oh, why can't I? if happy little bluebirds fly beyond the rainbow, why, oh, why can't I?
You're with Gordon, Phil and Chris. Been there, done that on Joy 94.9.
Now, did you work out where to weigh a pie?
Hello, hello, the lovely, our theme song, our anthem, Judy Garland singing.
She gets straight to the point. She says, somewhere over the rainbow, weigh up high.
Oh, that's where we've got to go and weigh the pie.
No, it's weigh up high.
Weigh up
any
high.
Any pie.
She might have been talking altitude, but I don't think so.
She was an absolute gay icon. She wasn't gay, but she was. We've adopted her as one of our icons over the years, or even while she was alive, because she seemed to be such a... I think she was one of those people that had this feeling about themselves, you know, that was they were put upon like she was... fed pills to keep her, put her to sleep, and fed pills to keep get her awake to do all the shows that she did and all the rest of
well,
it.
Well, that's in later life.
Yeah.
But I think as a little girl,
That was a little girl when she was doing Wizard of Oz.
Okay. Yeah.
On the 10th of June 1922, she was born.
Frances Gumm.
Oh, what a dumb-sounding name.
Well, you don't get to choose your name.
It just depends what your father's name was in those days.
Yeah, but how did she come up with Judy Garland? Well, apparently there was a 1930s song called Judy, and there was a film critic about the same time called Robert Garland.
Mm.
So it sort of made connections, and there she was.
There she was, yeah.
But she was a little... She did a promo film or singing spot that didn't get her anywhere. And then the MGM owned her at that stage, and I do say owned her.
Oh, God, yes.
She was only a youngster, and they did another promo, which suddenly started to take off, and she got a little bit more public interest. But it was because she was a child singer as much as anything. She was a captive of the system.
That's right, and she not only... She starred in Over the Rainbow, and she was supposed to have played a part of a 13-year-old. I think she was about 19 or 20 when she did that part, because she was only a very small, slight figure. And she also appeared in a couple of Mickey Rooney shows and all the rest of it, mostly in black and white. And, of course, the somewhere over the Wizard of Oz, of course, started off in black and white and went to Technicolor and come back to black and white. Yes.
There was a film star, a major film star of the time, Clark Gable, had a birthday party in February 1937, and Judy went along there, and she sang You Made Me Love You.
Oh.
And that was her birthday present
for him.
And because there was a big crowd there, I mean, she played her managers played the crew wonderfully well by exposing her to such a powerful Hollywood crowd.
Yeah, but Judy knew what she was doing. She was very aware of what she had to do to play the system, and she knew how to do it and did it very, very well. Yep. I watched a clip of hers from a movie called The Harvey Girls.
Yeah.
And she was the star, of course, by then, and she came on and she sang on the Atchison, Topeka and the Santa Fe, which became one of her big, big hits.
Yeah.
Mm.
And it was around about this time that, as you were saying, that Judy was given pills by the company.
By MGM. They used to give her the pills to sleep and give her the pills to waken her up so she could get on and perform. Mm. That's where she became addicted to all these medications, and it remained with her basically for the rest of her life.
Can I just quote you a few words here?
Mm-hmm.
Her weight fluctuation, apparently because she was such a small person and waif-like when she was slim, she did tend to put on the pounds as well. So she was soon given amphetamines in order to give her the desired streamlined figure. And she was given numerous pills by the studio doctors in order to combat her tiredness on set.
Hmm.
So this was the downward spiral that you're talking about.
That's right.
That resulted in her lifelong drug addiction.
But you've got to remember that they would be awoken at 4 o'clock in the morning, because they would have to get to the studio, get made up, be ready to go on set by about 8 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
And then they would work all day. And that would be that was the lifestyle.
This would have predated child labour laws.
Oh, just about, I reckon, yeah.
Probably became the reason for child labour laws.
Yes, yeah.
The film The Wizard of Oz was in 1939. That is such a long time ago, but it is classically rolled out on TV.
Every now and again.
Twice a year.
Yeah, yeah.
Seems to be always available somewhere.
Yeah. I read a very interesting book about, it was called Woz, and it was supposed to be the life of Judy Garland growing up as Frances with a dog called Toto that was then made into the movie, and it was a very cleverly written book, yeah.
In 1946, after World War II, she was in Wizard of Oz at the beginning of World War II, and after it, she gave birth to her daughter, Liza Minnelli.
Yes, there's a strange situation because Liza Minnelli's father was as gay as all get out.
Oh, yeah.
Vincent, yeah.
But do you know any stories about what was happening on the set with The Wizard of Oz, with Judy and the rest of them? I mean, they were very naughty. They had fun.
Oh, yeah. They did all sorts of weird, wonderful things to the dwarfs, the people that were playing the dwarfs. And they would, in the book I was reading, they used to pick them up underneath their armpits if they needed to go to the toilet because they couldn't walk very fast with the clothes they had on. They couldn't get out of the clothes. So they would have to, some big bloke would pick up two of them at once and take them to the toilet.
Well, I've got a little quote from Judy about that second sense. Some of the midget men used to tease me while we were making The Wizard of Oz. They used to sneak under my dress. I told them if they ever went under there and I found out about it, they were in big trouble. So she was being a little bit naughty there.
Yeah, but it was apparently they had a lot of fun making the movie, but then again, funny part about it, that when you read the receipts for that movie, it was never the most popular movie that was ever made. It didn't make a lot of money. It hardly returned its own cost of making on its first issue, and it wasn't until the second or third issue that it started to make a bit of money.
Well, it was so adventurous, it must have been so expensive to do. There you go. And Judy is quoted as saying, "As for my feelings towards the song Over the Rainbow, it has become part of my life. It's so symbolic of all my dreams and wishes that I'm sure that's why people sometimes get tears in their eyes when they hear it." And I would think that a lot of the gay community also have the same reaction to the song.
That's the only song I've ever heard Judy Garland sing live when she was at Festival Hall back in the 60s. And she was really, really out of it. And she wasn't going to go on. She didn't want to appear here in Melbourne at all. And because of her contract, she said she wouldn't. She walked on the stage and it was like she was treading on eggshells trying to move before them because she was quite drunk, you know. And she got on there and she forgot the words and the crowd was singing for her and trying to keep it a go. But that was all. That was all we got. Somewhere Over the Rainbow in a very, very awful fashion. I felt so annoyed. You know, well, you weren't annoyed, you felt sorry for her because she didn't want to do it, you know. But they forced her, they made her do it.
And I think we're rather grateful, though, that we've got that anthem because it's been useful in us trying to fight for our own rights.
Mm.
And one of the things that we as a radio station do is represent the views and everything of our community. It's our radiothon time.
It is. And I have a paid political announcement.
Oh, okay. Go for it.
If you've already supported us during the 2017 Radiothon, thank you. You're keeping us on air, out loud and proud across the globe at a time when the LGBTI community most needs a voice, much like we spoke about earlier. If you haven't yet, you still have time to sign up, renew your membership or donate to Joy this Radiothon. You'll go into the draw to win a Holden Astra, a MotoGP helicopter adventure, a midsummer VIP experience, or a cruise to New Caledonia. Support us now. Head to joy.org.au for details. We still need Joy, and Joy still needs you.
Judy was also under the pressures from her mother, who was...
She was a real stage mum, wasn't she?
Well, she was.
Mm-hmm.
And Judy is quoted as saying, she was a real wicked witch of the West. So that's where she got that. But Judy, about her own life... I was born at the age of 12 on a Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer lot. She didn't have a childhood that she could speak of. She was really into the system.
That's exactly right. She was a child of the system, actually, at that time. I don't think they would get away with it these days.
Can I point out, she wasn't completely miserable.
Why? How come?
Well, we all know about Liza.
Yes.
But Liza's got a sister. Well, probably
Nora.
Half-sister.
Lorna.
Lorna Luft.
Yeah, that's right.
And she was interviewed in Melbourne not very long ago, and she recalled a story where she and Liza were staying in a hotel in London, and they'd returned to their room, and the convention then was, if you wanted your shoes cleaned, you'd leave them outside the door, and staff would come around, clean them, and return them the following morning.
Mm-hmm.
So they went around all these hotel rooms on different floors and just substituted people's shoes for other people's shoes.
They changed the shoes at the door.
Which they thought was hilarious.
Well,
and Lorna said to her mother, "Aren't we going to get in trouble? We're going to get caught." And Liza said, Who on earth is going to suspect me of stealing their shoes?
Moving their shoes around. Well, she was wearing red shoes, so that was probably all right.
Her ruby
red slippers. She probably clicked her heels and all the shoes went back to the where they should have been.
That's right.
Stay tuned. We've got more for you. We'll be talking about Mark Feely, whoever he is, but we will tell you. We'll be talking about Cole Porter and Bonnie Tyler.
Oh,
quite a musical show.
Musical show this week. Oh, how lovely.
You're on Joy.
Great shows, great topics, great radio. Joy 94.9.
And that great little song there was Marcus Feely and the rest of the Westlife boy band with Dreams Come True. And we've got some dreams. We hope they'll come true. Hope your dreams come true as well. You're with Chris, Phil and Gordon. Been there, done that on Joy 94.9.
They're a great little group, actually. They've got a great sound, but a typical boy band sound, of course.
It was of the year of the year 2000.
Yes, that's right.
But what do we know about Marcus Feely?
He is out and proud. He had a huge thing about his life. Like a lot of people in that situation, they're never sure whether they should come out and live their life as they should or hold it back in so that they don't get pilloried and people don't buy their records. There's a whole system of that way back in those years.
Marcus Feely was born on the 28th of May 1980. I nearly said 1880. No, he's an Irish singer and songwriter, and he was one of the lead singers in the boy band Westlife from 98 to 2012.
And then he's got a solo career.
Yeah, but Ronan Keating from Boyzone was brought in to co-manage the group.
Oh, right. West. Okay. Right.
So that's a bit of Boyzone or a bit of boy band heritage running the show.
But Marcus Feely left, well, he and his partner of 7 years split, and he said that the split up between him and his partner was worse than when Westlife finally gave it away.
Yeah.
He said it was worse.
It was interesting that he had come out gay to himself and his family before even going into Westlife, and the manager of Westlife didn't even realise that Marcus Feely was gay.
Mm.
And they kept it that way because of the keeping the boy band together. Boy bands, they all look about the same, four or five young-faced guys in their early 20s.
Usually very good-looking.
Yeah.
Because it's very good on television when they are.
And being mainly straight, of course, they attracted the young girls, the Bobby Soxers.
Yeah.
No, what are they? Groupies.
Yeah.
What else? What other name?
The Bobby Soxers go back to Sinatra's era.
Yeah, no, let's call them just fans.
They were fans, yes, that'll do. Yeah.
I think the modern fan, though, is quite accepting of a gay male in a group.
Oh, yeah.
More so. See, I can understand Marcus staying in the closet in much the same way that, what's that friend from New York, Bette Midler's pianist?
Barry Manilow.
Barry Manilow, yeah.
He was afraid of coming out to affect or offend all his little
head
fans.
And he finally came out.
Yeah, and they don't care.
No.
So you've got other gay performers who come out before their career.
Yeah, but so like here at Joy, we have so many gay out and proud singers of both sexes, and we play them regularly during the day in the music mix that we play. And I think we're obliged to have a certain percentage of out and proud singers, as well as a certain percentage of Australian singers. So if you want to listen to out and proud singers, listen to Joy. You'll hear a lot of them. Yeah. And all their new songs and everything, because Chris is very good with doing that.
But they should be more...
Not you, Chris. Other Chris.
But they should be less worried about coming out, because I think the world is a much safer place commercially than it used to be.
Well, Phil, when you consider how many other countries in the world have actually got have equal marriage, you've got most of the big countries of the world that have got it. You have a lot of European countries have same-sex marriage.
Are you trying to tell me the sky didn't fall in?
No, it didn't, and the people
but
still...
the Bible said...
Yeah. Yeah, but see, Britain and America even now have equal marriage, but where are we? Hello? But we still have a hell of a lot of us out and proud Australian singers.
Well, I think Eurovision is as gay as you as all get out.
Well, I think it is too. Well, a couple of transgendered people have won it, and Conchita Wurst, which is who was a drag performer.
Not every artist is gay, but there's so much gay in the front of people there that it is. As you say now, part and parcel of modern life.
Yeah, but somebody was asking me the other day about the gay people in the entertainment industry, and I said, well, the gay people that come out during the television series, they can't come out while they're making movies. The movie studios won't allow the gay people to sort of be, they have to not say they're gay if they're going to be a film star, but they can be anything they want to if they want to be in the television. It's amazing.
With the notable exception of a few people like a gentleman we spoke about last week, young Harvey Firestein.
Harvey Firestein, yeah.
There's no doubting he's gay.
Yes,
and
that's
he's
true.
Made a heck of a lot of movies.
Yes, that's right, yeah. But he was a character actor.
He sure is a character.
So, boy bands, really interesting and wonderful. But we've got a song here from another icon who herself is not gay, but is so gay friendly. So let's have a listen to Bette Midler with a song that actually is a very, very sad story song, but the way she sings it makes it so magical and fun. You're on Joy. Been there, done that with Gordon, Phil and Chris.
Miss Odess regrets she's unable to lunch today. Madam, Miss Odess regrets she's unable to lunch today. And she's sorry to be delayed. But last evening down in Lover's Lane she strayed. Madam, Miss Odess regrets she's unable to lunch today. When she woke up and found that her dream of love was gone, madam, she ran to the man who had led her so far astray. And from under her velvet gown she drew a gun and shot her lover down. Madam, Miss Otis regrets she's unable to lunch today. From the jail, madam, they strung her up on the willow across the way. And the moment before she died, she lifted up her
off to lunch. With all his regrets, she's unable to lunch today.
A diverse sound for a diverse crowd. Joy 94.9.
You're with Chris Gordon and Phil. Been there, done that on Joy 94.9. And wasn't that a noisy little song from our Bette Midler? Our Bette Midler? Where did I get that concept from?
Well, she became famous from singing in the baths, didn't she?
In the gay baths, yes. Mm. She was singing that song, Miss Otis Regrets, which is a Cole Porter song. And Cole Porter, who was he? He was a famous American composer and songwriter early of last century. He was born in 1891. He started writing songs when he was about 18 or 20, so all in the 21st century. He wrote over 1,400 popular songs of the era. He had a marriage of convenience to suit the prying eyes of society at that time, but he was quite a party guy, sharing his affections quite generously with the gay guys of the period. His male-only parties were notorious. However, his musical prowess dominated his reputation. He died in 1964, so he's not a modern person. But because of his lyrics, he was able to actually get beautiful stories across. Sadly, we don't have songs like this anymore. And they're not old-fashioned. They're just good examples of being able to tell a story with words.
You've got to remember that Cole Porter, when they were writing songs in his days, they always wrote a verse before they wrote the song, an opening verse that basically told you a little bit about the scene that they were setting. And Cole Porter was a brilliant lyricist. He wrote most of the, he just about wrote all his own words to his own songs, of course.
Mm.
And Anything Goes is one of his big songs from the stage show that he wrote for Anything Goes. And it's that's produced time and time again. I think I've seen about six versions of Anything Goes here in Melbourne since I've been in Melbourne. And he also had wrote double entendre words to his songs.
Let me just read you the words of the song Love for Sale.
Mm-hmm.
And then you will see how naughty he was, but how clever he was as well.
Mm.
But in the song that we've just sung, that Miss Bette Midler has just sung for us, we're told by a servant of a polite society lady how her employer was seduced and abandoned. In just a few lines of lyrics, we learn that Miss Otis hunted down and shot her seducer, and she was arrested, taken from the jail by a mob, and lynched. The servant conveys Miss Otis' regrets, polite, apologetic words to her friends, that Miss Otis regrets she is unable to lunch today.
Yes, she was too busy swinging around.
She was. What a way of presenting a song.
That's the way he used to write. They wrote stories in their songs in those days. They started at a beginning and they went through to an end.
Mm.
Most of the songs did, you know. And his Love for Sale, the lyrics in Love for Sale is so, they're so sexy, really, when you listen to them, you know.
And they're basically the story of a girl who's selling her body for earthly pleasures.
Yes, that's right. Oh, she's trying to make some money, honey.
Exactly. Who will climb the stairs to paradise?
To paradise. Yeah.
I'll read those words now for you.
Yeah, all right.
Love for sale. Appetizing young love for sale. Love that's fresh and still unspoiled. Love that's only slightly soiled. Love for sale. Who will buy? Who would like to sample her supply? Who's prepared to pay the price for a trip to paradise? Love for sale. So that was Cole Porter, and what a legacy he has left for us of an old era, a different era, in some ways still applicable today.
And every one of the good singers has covered his songs. You could, like every singer that was around in those
modern
days.
Modern singers too?
Some of the modern singers do them, yes. They do them in cabaret. Yeah. They'll put them in cabaret because there's always stories that they can tell in cabaret. They're very popular for cabaret singers.
So they tell their own life story and then chuck in a Cole Porter song.
That's right.
Another singer that we have on our playing machine today, he has a birthday on the 8th, or had a birthday on the 8th of June 1951. A Welsh singer known for her distinctive husky voice. We're talking about Gaynor Hopkins, but better known as Bonnie Tyler.
That's right, yes. I heard her being interviewed and she said, oh, she said, at home I'm just Gaynor Hopkins. But nobody calls me Bonnie Tyler at home. And the village where she lives in Wales, and she still lives in Wales where she was born, and but still travels around the world. I think she's just been out here recently, hasn't she, on a tour?
She was born in 1951, but she came to real prominence in 1978 with a song that we'll actually go out with on today's show, a song called It's a Heartache. And with her husky voice, that particular song has been a favourite with drag stars on stage. Anybody who's gay can stand up there and almost sing the song along, and it doesn't look out of place.
There's one of her other songs that I really do like is Lost in France. That's a great song.
Oh, yeah.
Really is a great song. But she's had some wonderful songs over the years.
Well, her biggest one of all is Total Eclipse of the Heart.
That's right, yes.
Which is a real 80s power ballad.
Yeah, yeah.
And with her voice,
she knew how to power ballad, didn't she?
Oh, she could turn them out.
But she had lots of influences from a young age. You know, Janis Joplin and Tina Turner, Aretha Franklin, Meatloaf, Joe Cocker, Dusty Springfield, even Guns N' Roses, Tony Braxton, Eminem, and she's also expressed an interest in collaborating with our modern-day Adele, whom she describes as a great songwriter, singer, and performer.
And, of course, in those days, people could sort of be influenced by other performers as well, but still keep their own way of doing things, you know.
Fancy sort of kicking off her modern career in 78, last century, and here we are 40 years later, almost, she's still going strong.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's such an individual, distinctive style that she has, that nobody could copy her.
She's not gay, she's married.
Oh, no, she's married with children.
She has been such a singer, a constant singer in our gay lives, it would seem, a recognisable point of musical history.
And there's an industry these days of recycling music, like the nostalgia tours.
Yeah.
And you'll get two or three artists, typically from the 80s, just come together, go out and do a tour and make a killing.
That's right. Yeah, go home again. More money in the superannuation fund. Good on them, anyhow. And they always come out to Australia in the summertime.
Oh, of course.
Because they can escape their northern winters. Good luck to them. Yeah.
Pity those poor people that come touring in our winters. But
yes, well, that's what we're just about to enter into winter, aren't we?
You're going to sneak away, aren't you, our winter?
I'm hoping that I'll have I don't know whether it's going to be that warm out in the middle of the Pacific in the middle of June, but it'll probably be a slightly warmer than what it is here because it's usually a very constant temperature when you get out towards Fiji and Nukuʻalofa.
The guy at the steering wheel to look for the big red line in the water. That's the equator. It'll be warmer up there.
Oh, good. I'll tell him to look for the big red line. Okay. Yeah.
And I must schedule my usual trip to Europe when we're in the depths of winter, but no, we'll see about that. And poor Philip, where
are you? I'm not going anywhere.
Well, that's right.
You've got to look after Eddie.
That's right.
But he could go on holidays with you.
Put him in the car and take him somewhere.
Yeah, we went to the beach once. He fell in love with a dead jellyfish. So I don't think he's the greatest tourist.
I think he needs a bit more education. You should take him.
He didn't even reach the waterline.
But he may be a dog that doesn't like water.
Oh, if it's anything like a bath, then he's not going.
No. Okay. What about the soft surface of sand? Does he cope with that?
It's good to dig in.
Yes.
And bury your dead jellyfish.
No, I wouldn't let him actually take it anywhere because it would be really nice in the car.
Yeah, yeah.
But yes, we're not travellers. I've done my travelling.
You've done your travelling, have you? Oh, okay.
Well, lovely to have had you with us today. If you need to send us a little massage,
You can send comments, good and bad, on the email machine.
Yes.
And we've been there at joy.org.au. All comments welcome.
Indeed. They mightn't be appreciated, but they're welcome. You're quite free to give
them. Well, but it's called the freedom of speech that we have in this country.
Is. And thank you again to Margaret Court for bringing up equal marriage again.
Cheerio for now. We'll see you
next
week.
Yeah. Bye.
It's a heartache. Nothing but a heartache. Hits you when it's too late. Hits you when you're down.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.